It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
The credit can actually be pretty big depending on how many qualifying children the taxpayer is eligible to claim. It does vary based on the taxpayer's adjusted gross income as well, and the maximum amounts for the credit for 2015, the 2015 return filed in 2016, are $6,242 for three or more qualifying children, $5,548 for two qualifying children, $3,359 for a taxpayer claiming it with one qualifying child, and then again, $503 for a taxpayer that's claiming the credit with no qualifying children.
Attorney Nancy Rosner at the Community Tax Law Project explains the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC, that helps low-income workers keep more of their income through credits, resulting in a larger income tax refund. And during this week's News You Can Use, we'll explain recent efforts to stop financial exploitation of vulnerable Virginians. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 283, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Financial exploitation is the illegal or improper use of someone else's money or belongings for the user's own personal benefit. In fiscal year 2014, Virginia's Adult Protective Services received 1,079 substantiated complaints of financial exploitation. Too often, exploitation occurs at the hands of a trusted family member, caregiver, agent under a power of attorney, or others abusing a position of trust. For many years, advocates and legislators have attempted to craft laws which would deter those who would victimize vulnerable Virginians through new or enhanced criminal penalties, or which would improve the ability of victims to recover their lost resources from the exploiter through the civil courts. In 2013, the legislature enacted a new code, Section 18.2-178.1, which makes it unlawful for someone who knows or should know that a person suffers from mental incapacity to take advantage of that mental incapacity to deprive the mentally incapacitated person of something of value. This law, which became effective July 1, 2013, defines mental incapacity as the condition of the victim at the time of the offense, which prevents the person from understanding the nature and consequences of the transaction or disposition of money or other property. The 2016 General Assembly will consider bills which would expand the class of victims in Section 18.2-178.1 to include those suffering not just with mental incapacity, but any incapacity resulting from mental illness, intellectual disability, physical illness or disability, advanced age, or other cause that prevents him or her from understanding the nature or consequences of the transaction or disposition of money or other thing of value. In addition, Bills such as HB 162 would enable the seizure and forfeiture of property used in the financial exploitation of incapacitated persons. Another attempt by the legislature to curb financial exploitation proposes the immediate referral by Adult Protective Services or the Department of Social Services to law enforcement of reports of financial exploitation of an adult over age 60 or incapacitated if the financial losses are expected to exceed $50,000. Nationally, only one of 25 cases of financial exploitation are reported. Indicators of financial exploitation include missing documents, suspicious activity on credit cards, forged or suspicious signatures on documents, changes to financial documents, and financial documents which favor a new acquaintance. If you suspect financial exploitation, contact Adult Protective Services toll-free at 1-888-832-3858. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Community Tax Law Project speaking with staff attorney Nancy Rosner, and we'll be talking today about the Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC. Welcome back to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Marty. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. And could you tell our listening audience what is the EITC, the Earned Income Tax Credit?
The EITC is a refundable tax credit for working people who earn low or moderate incomes. And the purpose of the credit is to offset taxes, supplement low wages, and to be a work incentive. And because it is a refundable credit, not only can it reduce your income tax liability for the year, but it can also put money back into your pocket. So as a reminder, a tax credit directly reduces your taxes dollar for dollar. So a $2,000 tax credit actually cuts your tax bill by $2,000.
Who can claim the Earned Income Tax Credit?
To be eligible to claim the credit, first and foremost, you do have to have earned income for the year. So you need wages, salaries, tips, net self-employment income. Those are just some examples. You also have to fall within the income requirements to be eligible for the credit because it is geared towards low-income individuals. Additionally, you have to file as either single, head of household, or married filing jointly to claim the credit. Unfortunately, you're not going to be eligible if you're married and you're filing separately from your spouse.
What are the rules for workers with a qualifying child?
So the qualifying child rules, there's basically four of them: the relationship test, the age test, the residency test, and the joint return test. For a relationship test, the child has to be related to the person claiming the child in a few different ways, either a child, stepchild, foster child, legally adopted child, sibling, step-sibling, or any one of their descendants. Then the child also has to meet the age test. So at the end of the filing year in question, the child has to have been younger than the person claiming that child, and then they also have to be under 19 or under 24 and a full-time student, or if the child is totally and permanently disabled, they can be any age. Then there's the residency test, so the child has to live with the person claiming them for over half of the year in question. And lastly, regarding the joint return, the child must not file a joint return for that tax year unless the child and the child's spouse did not have a separate filing requirement and only filed a return to receive a refund. It's important that the child is not claimed by more than one person in the same year.
So those are the rules for workers with a qualifying child. What are the rules for workers without a qualifying child?
So again, you do have to have earned income to be eligible for the credit. You also have to be between age 25 and age 65 as of the end of the year in question. So this is very different from the earned income credit based on having a qualifying child in which there is no age limit. You also have to live in the United States for more than half the year, and you must not qualify as a dependent of another person. If you're claiming the credit without a qualifying child, $503 would be the maximum credit you could get for 2015.
Now, you keep talking about earned income. What is earned income for the purposes of the earned income tax credit?
Some examples include wages, salaries, tips, other taxable employee pay, union strike benefits, even net earnings from self-employment, generally speaking.
Now, are there certain disability retirement benefits other than Social Security or SSI benefits that are considered as earned income for the purposes of the earned income tax credit?
Yes, actually, long-term disability benefits that are received prior to the minimum retirement age would be considered earned income for this credit. And that's because the benefits are treated as wages until the taxpayer reaches the age of retirement.
So how would an individual taxpayer go about getting the earned income tax credit?
So the taxpayer would have to file a tax return in order to claim the credit, and that's whether they are required or not required to file one for the year in question. And they would file either a Form 1040 or a Form 1040A if they're claiming at least one child. And if they're filing and claiming the credit without any qualifying children, they could file Form 1040EZ. In addition to that, you do have to file the schedule for the earned income credit, which is Schedule EIC.
So for tax year 2015, the return for which will be filed April 15th of 2016, what are the earned income tax credit income limits?
Because it is a credit that's geared towards low and moderate income folks, there are some limitations here. So your adjusted gross income for the year does have to be less than $47,747 if you have three or more qualifying children, or $53,267 if you're married and filing jointly with three qualified children. And then it kind of scales down to if you were not claiming a qualifying child, the limitation would be your income would have to be less than $14,820 for the year if you're single, or $20,330 if you're filing jointly without a qualifying child.
And again, for the tax year 2015 that people will be filing their income tax return in 2016, what are the EITC maximum credit amounts? In other words, what's the most that a taxpayer would be able to get as a credit from the EITC?
The credit can actually be pretty big depending on how many qualifying children the taxpayer is eligible to claim. It does vary based on the taxpayer's adjusted gross income as well. And the maximum amounts for the credit for 2015, the 2015 return filed in 2016, are $6,242 for three or more qualifying children, $5,548 for two qualifying children, $3,359 for a taxpayer claiming it with one qualifying child, and then again, $503 for a taxpayer that's claiming the credit with no qualifying children.
So those are substantial sums. Those are much more than the average paycheck by far of the people who are filing for the earned income tax credit. If the IRS denied the EITC last year, but a taxpayer may qualify for this year, what should the taxpayer do?
The taxpayer should file a specific form to recertify if they want to claim it in the year following the year that it was disallowed. And that form is Form 8862. It does need to be filed with your return if you are going to claim the EITC again and claim qualifying children. However, if you were denied last year but you are not claiming qualifying children this year, you will not need to recertify.
So you may have covered this earlier, but who exactly is a qualifying child?
So again, a qualifying child has to meet certain criteria. They have to be related to the person claiming them as their child, stepchild, foster child, sibling or step-sibling, or their descendants. The child also has to meet the age requirement, and that means that at the end of the filing year, the child was younger than the person claiming them, and also under 19 or under 24 and in school full time, or if they're permanently and totally disabled, they can be any age. Also, the child must live with the person claiming them for this credit for over half the year in question. And lastly, the child must not file a joint return for the tax year unless the child and the child's spouse did not have a separate filing requirement and only filed a return to receive a refund.
Now, I believe that sometimes foster children might be eligible for claiming the earned income tax credit. Who would be an eligible foster child?
An eligible foster child would be one that's placed with the taxpayer by an authorized placement agency or by judgment, decree, or other order of any court of competent jurisdiction. We have had some clients that have run into issues. You know, they were taking care of someone, but it was not through this formal process, and therefore, unfortunately, they did not qualify for the credit because the child was technically not a foster child by this definition.
So how does the IRS figure the earned income tax credit?
The credit is figured on a bell curve, essentially, in which lower income individuals with more children get a larger credit. But eventually the credit does phase out once your income hits the income limits that we discussed earlier.
And what if you are prohibited from claiming the earned income tax credit for a period of years?
So what you're talking about is a ban that can be imposed by the IRS, and usually that will last either 2 years or 10 years. The ban for 2 years will be put into place by the IRS if the IRS has made a final determination to reduce or disallow your earned income tax credit due to your reckless or intentional disregard of the earned income tax credit rules. So the IRS is looking at your case and why you claim the rules or why they think you claim the rules. And if they believe that you have this reckless or intentional disregard of the rules, they will impose this 2-year ban. And then even worse than that, they can impose a 10-year ban on someone, preventing them from claiming the credit if they have made a final determination to reduce or disallow the credit due to fraud.
And what would be some of the reasons that would be considered fraud and result in a 10-year ban?
Unfortunately, some people take advantage of this credit because it can result in such a large amount of money being refunded to the person claiming it. So any sort of schemes in which you're claiming people on purpose that you know you're really not permitted to claim, if you're using Social Security numbers you know you're not supposed to be using, any sort of schemes like that that would be considered fraudulent could result in this 10-year ban. And just to point out, if this ban is imposed and you're unable to prove to the IRS that the ban is improper, you have to wait out the ban, and filing that form 8862 that we previously discussed to recertify is not going to help you in this situation.
So if I understand correctly, once the IRS announces its intention to impose the ban, you need to appeal that right away if you think it's improper. Otherwise, you won't have a chance to appeal it at all?
I believe so.
Okay, is a refund from the earned income tax credit considered income under any other federally funded public benefit program?
No. So these refunds received via the earned income tax credit are not considered income for any federal or federally funded public benefit programs such as Medicaid, Supplemental Security Income, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, low-income housing, or most cash assistance payments received through state TANF programs.
So given that it's not considered income, fair to say that the receipt of that would not have to be reported to any of these agencies or programs that you just described?
Correct, or it should not impact eligibility to receive funding or assistance under these programs.
Now, is a refund from the earned income tax credit protected from the taxpayer's creditors under Virginia law?
Yes, the earned income tax credit, as of this past year, is protected from creditors.
Now, around this time of year, people should be getting the W-2 forms from their employer. What should a taxpayer do if he or she gets an incorrect W-2 form and the employer will not issue a corrected W-2 form?
Unfortunately, this does happen, and if it does happen to you, what you need to do is after February 14th, you can request that an IRS representative initiate a Form W-2 complaint. You can call the IRS at 1-800-829-1040 or visit one of their IRS Taxpayer Assistance Centers in person. And essentially, if you request that they file this complaint, the IRS will send your employer a letter requesting that they provide you with a corrected Form W-2 within 10 days. And the letter advises your employer of their responsibilities to provide this to you, as well as some penalties that they may experience if they fail to do that. The IRS will send you a letter with some instructions and a Form 4852, which is substitute for Form W-2, and you can actually use that to file your tax return in the event that your employer does not provide you with the corrected W-2 in time. And you would probably need to use your last paycheck of the year in order to estimate what your income and taxes should be listed as on that substitute form W-2.
On another topic, will a taxpayer be charged interest and penalties for filing and paying taxes late?
Yes, there are actually two different types of penalties. There are late filing penalties and late paying penalties. And importantly, if you were to file an extension to file your tax return, so let's say you don't think you're going to get it in by April 15th and you file an extension giving you more time until October 15th to get your return in, that's actually only an extension of the requirement to file your return. So you would still have to pay any balance due on the return by April 15th. Otherwise, you will likely be hit with late paying penalties as well as some interest. And I'd like to point out that even if you are unable to pay the tax that you owe, it's better for you to file the return anyway, because the late filing penalties are often higher than the late paying penalties. And the IRS does provide different options for payment plans or hardship status, even if you're unable to pay the balance due after you file your return.
Can a taxpayer receive a tax refund if the taxpayer is currently making payments for a prior year's return?
Unfortunately, even if you're on a payment plan paying off your past tax debt, that does not mean that you will be getting your refund for the current year. First, the refund will be applied to any previous year's debt, and then anything left over will be refunded to you. However, if you do have other outstanding debts due to federal or state agencies, let's say you owe some back child support or some student loans that are in an outstanding status, it's possible that your refund could be applied to those debts first before you would get any portion of it.
And what should a taxpayer do if the taxpayer made a mistake on a federal income tax return already filed in a previous year?
If it's a small mistake, like a math error, the IRS actually does have the authority to go ahead and correct that mistake for you on your tax return. However, if the mistake was a larger error, you really should file an amended tax return to correct the mistake. Technically, you're not legally required to if you believe the original return was correct when you filed it. However, if you left off income or claimed credits or deductions that you shouldn't have, you really should file the amended return, because it's very likely the IRS will catch that mistake later on, and then you may owe some additional interest for all the time that has passed, and perhaps even some additional penalties.
Okay, so where can people get more information about the Earned Income Tax Credit?
First and foremost, people can feel free to give us a call, the Community Tax Law Project. We are located in Richmond, Virginia, and you can reach us at 804-358-5855. You can also visit our website at www.ctlp.org. And there's also some very helpful information on the IRS website, as well as the website for the Taxpayer Advocate Service.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Nancy Rossner. She is a staff attorney at the Community Tax Law Project, and we have been talking about the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a refundable tax credit that not only can reduce your tax liability, but even put money back into your pocket. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Marty.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. What are your rights when the police stop you, or if they want to search you, or if they arrest you? Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when criminal defense attorney, former prosecutor, and current member of the House of Delegates, Manoli Lupasi, discusses your rights during a police stop and arrest. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.